It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else.
This is The Stinking Truth.
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey guys, welcome to the Stink Truth Podcast. Mark Schlereth alongside Mike Evans. Thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us as we approach the NFL draft just a few days away, Mike.
Can it hurry up and get here?
Yeah, please,
I think I speak for everybody out there. Like, enough. I'm done. I'm over.
Right.
The rumors and the speculation. Although there are some pretty juicy ones still out there. How about this one? So Washington last week had this big group of prospects in at the same time, including three or four quarterbacks, one of whom was Jaden Daniels. Well, according to some reports, Jaden Daniels wasn't happy that it was everybody. He thought it was going to be just him, and that supposedly he has soured on Washington. And also J.J. McCarthy's odds, you can bet on anything in Vegas these days, J.J. McCarthy's odds of being picked by Washington number two have gone up dramatically. What do you make of all of it?
Man, I'll tell you, there are so many thoughts just off the top of my head about the generation of players that we're creating. And to no fault of their own, honestly, but this whole, like, take the NIL, for instance. If the going gets tough, I can pack my stuff and leave mentality. All of a sudden, they throw a curveball at you, and you get offended. And we're developing a society of victims. And it's interesting, you know, I was up at CU the other day, kind of doing some coaching and stuff, and I thought about transfer portal, and I thought about what we're creating in these kids. And I don't mean to get really deep on you, but like one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible is Philippians 4:13. And for those who don't know, Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And it's probably one of the most misapplied verses in the Bible, because it's basically saying, hey, there's an assurance of a goal, right? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And people use it as this assurance, but they don't read Philippians 4:12, where Paul says, I know what it is to be both full and hungry, to abound and suffer need. And I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So essentially, it's not about assurance of a goal. It's about, regardless of the situation I find myself in, whether I'm full or hungry, whether I'm rich or poor, whatever the case may be, that I can have assurance that things are going to be okay. And so that's the proper context. So it basically takes away pity and fear and victimhood and puts the responsibility back on you that regardless of those things, things are going to work out. Things are going to be okay. So to me, it says that fear cannot break me unless I give it permission to break me. Circumstances cannot break me unless I give them permission to break me. And that's what that scripture says to me. It removes comfort as a requirement for contentment. And so the kids today, they grow up in this world of, if it doesn't work my way, man, I'm just going to pack up and leave. And I will tell you this about just my own career. Man, I went through position to position to position, injury to injury to injury. And I look back on it, and I'm thankful for all those things because they helped me put perspective on the game, helped me grow up, and helped me realize, you know, that all those different issues at the time, they were devastating. But that's what kept me in the league for 12 years. That's what educated me on the game all those different experiences. I will tell you what, I've never learned anything about myself in the good times, Mike, because I was too busy patting myself on the back. It was during the tough times when I learned how tough I could be, you know, how much, you know, how much I could continue to push and to grind and all those things. And there's a part of me that feels sorry for this generation of kids, because if the going gets tough, they can just pack up and leave.
Now, to be fair, the report is that Daniel's agent wasn't happy with it.
Right, but you know,
if Daniel's himself was fine with it, then why would his agent be unhappy with it? So it's fair to speculate that Daniel's also wasn't happy with it.
I understand that.
And that the agent may be just taking the heat for Daniel's.
I understand that that's what we do, but you know, here's a guy that left Arizona State, right, and went to LSU. So, I mean, and again, no fault of their own, right? This is the rules, and this is what we have created and we have established. And so, you know, kids are taking advantage of those things. But
Would it be a red flag for drafting a guy? Would, you know, is this like the movie Draft Day, where you're like, oh, nobody showed up at Bo Callahan's birthday party?
Yeah,
you know, this kind of thing.
right.
I mean, is it?
I don't know that it's a red flag, but it is. All these things are concerns. You take all these things into account. You know, how a guy reacts and how a guy responds, and you know, and how he faces that kind of quote unquote competition. Do you become the alpha in that situation, or do you shrink? Right. The one thing I don't want in any sport is the guy who wilts like a flower in the August heat. You know, I don't want that guy. I'll go back to saying this, and I can't say this enough. No fault of their own. This is the system that they've been given. Like, can you imagine growing up in today's society with social media basically telling you, here's what you're worth, right? You've got to get to the point where, you know, it's the old, you know, bees don't concern themselves with wolves don't concern themselves with the opinion of sheep.
Bees?
Well, there's a bees one too. Like, a bee doesn't take time to explain to a fly why honey's better than shit. Something like that.
Huh.
I can go
Did
from
you just make
I
that go, up.
No, I've heard it's something of that
something
nature.
Heard?
I can go from quoting scripture to talking about poop and bees and flies and
you
shit.
You are versatile.
Yeah, there is no question.
Mean,
You
are versatile.
You are correct, sir.
You are correct. The guy just is like dazzling you with Philippians, and then he's talking about bees and fly shit.
Yeah.
But you make a good point, because it you know, you're these teams are looking to draft their dude. Right?
The guy,
your
right.
Your guy who is going to be, you know, there in Arrowhead in January,
right,
going toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes, and you got to make sure this guy is the dude.
Right. That's exactly right. This is where I came up with the boo rating, my analytics scale. You know, all the analytics, everybody's fascinated with analytics, right? And there's only one that matters to me. And we created it on our radio show. It's the boo rating, B-O-O, balls over opponent. So when I bring all those quarterbacks into one room, I want one dude to have the balls over the other guys.
And isn't that the reason for doing that in the first place?
I think so.
I mean, you these teams, in the endless, long buildup that it takes to get to the draft, aren't they constantly trying to put these guys into taxing situations, mm-hmm, whether it's, hey, Sean Payton says the day before we're going to meet with the quarterback, we send him all kinds of information to see if the next day
he's able to retain it.
You know, we want to pressurize them. I would think that was the same idea behind bringing in all these prospects at the same time, is just to see who emerges as the alpha.
Who rises.
Right?
You know, it's interesting. I talked to one of my guys, my insiders over there in D.C. I still have connections in D.C., as you well know. And
You're up on the wall. You're a hero. You're a hog.
Yes. All those things are true. And my guy says, like, he doesn't know who they're going to draft, but the scuttlebutt around town is they're really enamored with J.J. McCarthy.
Well, Vegas has heard the same thing because Vegas odds on J.J. McCarthy getting drafted 2 to Washington have only gotten better and better, from like 20 to 1 to 17 to 1 to now 11 to 1. Mm-hmm. So, and it reminds me of what Jim Harbaugh said soon after he took the Charger job. He was talking about J.J. McCarthy. He said, you watch. He said, once teams get into this whole process, and once they are able to really dive deep into McCarthy as a player, as a person, don't be surprised if he's the first quarterback that comes off the board. Well, he's not going to be the first quarterback. That's still Caleb Williams, but he might end up being number two.
Yeah, he may well be. And I've talked to you about this a ton. You know, when you start talking about college football and you start talking about the differences between the college game and the NFL game, and how many stark differences there are, where the college game is basically formationally, you're talking about everything is in four wides. I mean, your base personnel in college is 10 personnel. So that's, you know, one back and four wide receivers, okay? So you're in 10. One back, no tight ends, four wide receivers. That's what 10 is, right? And then you might shift down to 11 occasionally, which is three wide receivers are back and one tight end, but most of it is spread. You know, 3-by-2 formations, whatever the case may be. So, or 2-by-2 formations with the back in the backfield, whatever it is. But that's kind of your base. Well, in the NFL, nobody bases out of 10 personnel. Nobody. I mean, if you're in 10 personnel, Mike, it's at the very end of the game where you're trying to get a Hail Mary. That's about it. Mm-hmm. That's about the extent of that personnel grouping. And all of a sudden, you got J.J. McCarthy operating a real NFL offense where he's probably calling plays like an NFL quarterback would. Formations, changing strengths, motioning in from one formation to another formation, using different personnel groups. This is probably something that intrigues everybody because he can talk the language, the NFL language, that most of the other quarterbacks can't talk. I mean, they flat can't talk it. Because that's not what they operate in. That's not the world they operate. They operate in quick, you know, on the ball, no huddle, reading cards off the sideline. And so he automatically passes the test of understanding strengths, understanding formations, understanding personnel groupings, getting in and out of certain things, changing the strength of the formation. He can probably talk the NFL language better than anybody else on the draft board that's supposed to go in the first round. So instantly you're intrigued. And then you start looking at things like, yeah, he didn't throw the ball a lot, but under pressure, I saw this stat floating up on the TV today, as a matter of fact, under pressure. So when he was, you know, under duress, he completed 68% of his passes, something of that nature. And again, I didn't hear it. I was just kind of looking on the screen while you were babbling on about some bullshit that I wasn't listening to. I was actually reading the ESPN screen up there. And then you asked me a question. I was like, huh? Like we do on our show all the time because I lost interest in whatever it was you were yammering about. I can't remember. I just can't.
Yeah, it was probably, you
got to be more
Denver Nugget playoff games. Right.
You got to be more
Colorado Avalanche playoff games.
Concise.
Sorry, that's not enough to keep your attention. Jeez. You know, you mentioned this in passing. I want to circle back to it.
Mm-hmm.
You spent the last couple of Saturdays in Boulder with CU helping out with Deion Sanders in spring practice. And I'm just kind of curious, and I think maybe I speak for a lot of people out there. Because we all see the public Deion Sanders, the bravado, the bluster, the showmanship.
Right.
What's the real Deion like?
Oh, he's like, he knows what he wants from his players, very connected to his players. You know, there is, I mean, obviously, there's a reality of the situation. You got to play. If you can play, you're going to get an opportunity to play. But there's a great connectivity between him and his players and him and his coaches and what they want. And it's not only about coaching, but it's about growing people up. And, there's an accountability factor and all those different things that go on as part of a coach. And, you know, to me, I just believe that to be the most important factor when it comes to coaching. Can you connect with the kids? Can you get them to believe in themselves? And can you get them to sacrifice for their teammates? And I think he does a great job with, like, I think their coaching staff and everything does, you know, they do a great job with all that stuff. But where they are, I think, probably above the average organization is just in communicating connectivity and how it's about us and us in this room and how we have to support one another. I think they do a really good job with that stuff. And that to me is probably as good as that probably to me is probably one of the most important things about creating a winning culture and a winning team.
Because you're around NFL teams every single week as part of your job on Fox. So you're out on those at those practices on Friday. So you get to see how NFL coaches operate. Is Deion a football coach, or would you put him in a different kind of category? Maybe a category all to himself. In terms of how he goes about his business.
He's a football coach. I mean, you think about he's been coaching, you know, from Pop Warner to all these teams to, you know, Deion's Academy, this, that, and the other. And then, you know, he was at Jackson State for a while. He's been coaching. Now, he knows what he wants out of practice. He knows what he wants from his coaches. He knows how he wants to operate his system. One thing that Deion does a really good job of is delegating the authority to coach your position and letting you coach that position. And he does a really good job of coaching the coaches. This is what I want. This is how it should look. This is the tempo that we should play with, all that kind of stuff. But I don't think there's any question that he's very good at delegating. He's very good at being the figurehead, being the CEO of the football team. But also, make no bones about it. I mean, Deion understands and knows football. He knows what he wants. But he lets his coaches coach. And I think that's I think there's beauty in that. Obviously, you can't coach every position. I think he's a really good coach.
Okay, cool. Because it's just the public
The bravado.
You know, prime time. Right. You know, prime. And the last couple of weeks, you've just been with Coach Sanders. And I'm wondering what the differences
are like. I'll just give you, for instance, like every team meeting starts with a thought process, right? So, you know, it was like last week, it was kind of job versus career. And, you know, and there's always some type of, you know, here's a definition or here's what we're talking about. They said something the other day. They had these military guys up there and they were just talking about, hold on, because I put, you know, in my notes, I have my wisdom notes, right? And I've had this for years. And if you look, I don't know, Matt, can you get on this? These notes, these are just, I think people can see that close enough, right? But if you just roll through these are notes that I've kept over a couple of years that just when people say things that resonate with me, that I'm like, oh, that's a really good quote. And yeah, sometimes they're just random quotes that I don't know who they come from. And sometimes they're, you know, I can attribute this one to Deion. He said last week, a lie is so fast it can outrun the truth any day. And that's 100%. That's like a real wisdom quote, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's one. So they're playing these military guys talking about the standards and everything. And this guy says, he tells a story, he goes, my dad was a military guy, you know, and we'd be walking down the street and he would correct people that were doing things incorrectly, right? Whether it was, you know, like not getting their garbage in the trash can, whatever. And he goes, it used to embarrass me. And I'd say, Dad, you know, I pulled him aside once. I said, Dad, why? Like, why are you correcting people? Like, not your job. And his dad stopped and goes, a standard passed over is a new standard set. I was like, damn, right? But isn't it true with your kids? If you don't correct them as they move out throughout the day, that becomes the standard?
Well, I mean, you call it a great standard. I think it's just a nice way to dress up being a busybody.
So,
all due respect, sir, thank you for your service, but maybe, you know.
Yeah, maybe lighten up a little bit.
Mind your own business a little bit, jeez.
So, you know, so they start with this kind of message, this team message. And then they open it up, and the first thing he does is open up and lets one of his players pray for the day. And so one, I mean, there's a team prayer that goes on, right? But it's one of the players having to stand up and pray for their, you know, their day and what they're thankful for. And it, for me, that just changes your perspective. When you open up in prayer every day and you're thankful for the opportunities you've been given, it helps you put you in the right perspective, right? So it puts you in this perspective of thanksgiving. And you cannot feel sorry for yourself and be in thanksgiving at the same time. Simultaneously, that can't happen. You're either thankful or you're feeling sorry for yourself, but you can't do both at the same time. So it puts you in a proper mindset. And I personally appreciate that. And then he always has somebody stand up and say something to the, you know, to the team and whatever. And like, it's a cool, there's a cool perspective there that I think create, you know, he says, well, culture, but it's creating a culture.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because a long time ago when he was playing for the Cowboys, when they were winning, when he won a Super Bowl with them, I was covering that Super Bowl and it struck me at that time. I was like, because I had a chance to see, be around the team a little bit
right.
while they were just kind of working and going through practices and stuff that Super Bowl week. And what struck me was, he seems like he's kind of almost quiet and just goes about his business, and that the Deion you get for public consumption is not necessarily the Deion in the locker room. The Deion is the teammate. Speaking of the Cowboys, Dak Prescott came out and said that he's basically at peace with what his Cowboys future could look like, and that would include not being afraid to leave after next season.
Should be interesting. I understand not wanting to set the market. I understand not wanting to pay Dak $60 million a year. But if he's your guy, and he's a guy that can lead you to a championship, I mean, he was virtually in the MVP running all season last year. So if he's your guy, and he led the league in touchdowns and all that stuff, right? If he is truly your guy, then you sign him to a long-term deal that you can manipulate over time to buy you space on the cap. If he's not your guy, you either don't sign him or you sign him to a deal that you know's got an out in 2 years and you eat that money. But, I mean, obviously it looks to me from the outside looking in that he's not your guy. And I guarantee you one thing, there would be a pretty long line of football teams in the National Football League that if Dak Prescott became available that would line up to sign him.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but think of it this way, because maybe you need to applaud Jerry Jones for doing something that a lot of teams don't want to do. You've made this point that there are only a handful of teams in the NFL that are truly committed to winning a Super Bowl,
right.
Correct? And in the case of a lot of teams, they probably know deep down that their quarterback that they've ridden with isn't the answer, but they're looking at it like, well, what is our alternative?
Right.
Okay, maybe we don't think this guy's the answer, but, you know, at least he's not bad, and it's better than the unknown of trying to go back and find a replacement. What if this is just Jerry Jones saying, you know what, we've been around him long enough, we got to win a Super Bowl. I just don't think he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Right. He doesn't pass the Joel Klatt confetti test.
And you know what? You know, what's the point in kicking the can down the road?
Mm-hmm.
Better to just rip the Band-Aid off and move on.
Well, see,
I would think you might applaud that thinking if that's the way they are thinking of Dak.
If you're thinking about Daniel Jones that way, I agree with you. If you're thinking about Kyler Murray that way, I would agree with you. Right.
So you think Dak passes the confetti test?
He does
you.
For me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, then I think about can Dak and the Cowboys win a Super Bowl? Well, certainly I think that he's got the ability to do that. Do I think he carries you to a Super Bowl championship? Probably not, but how many quarterbacks do? Like, Aaron Rodgers is winning all these MVPs. He's got one. So obviously, you've got to create a system or an offense that takes some of that pressure off that quarterback, right? So when you get in, like you get into those games, man, especially come playoff time, it's not just about your quarterback carrying you. It's about your football team carrying you. And I've always believed it's not the quarterback that wins games or championships. It's good football teams that win them. And so I think I look at Dak and say, could Dak be the guy in charge at the quarterback position that can help you win a Super Bowl? Absolutely. Now, is he going to basically sling you on his back and carry you through the playoffs? Probably not. But again, like I said, name me the quarterbacks who have done that, who have slung teams. I mean, John Elway slung three teams and carried them to the promised land and then got his ass kicked in all three. Not his own fault, obviously, but you know, he took teams that weren't as established or as good as the Giants, as the Redskins, as the San Francisco 49ers. But give me a list of the quarterbacks who have drugged their team to the Super Bowl and ended up coming away with a win.
As of right now, there's really only one guy that gives you that feeling of being able to lift, to elevate. Mm-hmm. And that's Mahomes.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
I was going to say Jeff Hostetler.
Yes. No, it's Mahomes.
Oh, damn. I'm here.
Well, speaking of Mahomes, did you see this story? So he and his wife were vacationing.
Mm-hmm.
A nice beach-type resort. And he had the misfortune, the Mahomes has had the misfortune of being in the same place as a lot of Raider fans.
Right.
So the video that's going around is a bunch of Raider fans heckling at Mahomes, Raiders, Raiders. Now, my question to you is, Raider fans heckling Mahomes, cool or... hey, this guy is your daddy. You look stupid.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, I mean, the last time they won a world championship was in the 80s. The 80s.
It's been a while.
So I would say that, you know, the Raider mystique, although the Raiders travel really well, but the Raider mystique is really lost on this current generation. They don't understand. Now, if you're, you know, at this resort where Mahomes is, and you're 76 years old going, I get it.
Right.
You actually were part of the regime that used to win.
Right.
But you haven't won anything lately.
So if you're a newer Raider fan, you just look like a toolbox.
Yeah, you look like a toolbox. But there is a part of me that definitely respects it.
Like, that you're so, like... unaware that it's cool, that you're like so able to suspend reality and know that the Raiders suck compared to the Chiefs, that you're still able to have the bravado, right?
Right.
That you still have that bravado to try to heckle Patrick Mahomes.
I used to love, during my time here in Denver, and you mentioned it was 11-1 against the Raiders, but going in to Oakland to play the Raiders. It was my favorite place to go play because the fans were just unrelenting turd burgers. And they would just be on your ass. And like we'd sit on the sideline and you had to keep your helmet on the sideline because they throw D-sized batteries at you sometimes. There's this great clip. We're coming out of the end zone. I think it's 1995. And Aaron Craver is our fullback at the time, and TD is in there. But Craver is now sitting at tailback. And so we're coming right off like the 2-yard line, right? We're running, I think it was like 18 handoff or 14 handoff, just a tight zone play to the right-hand side. We snap the ball, and Elway goes to hand it. And what you see on film is a full beer can with the open lid. So it's going tumbling ass over tea kettle like this, comes on the film, and there's a spray of beer just So obviously they shook it up.
Yeah.
You know, opened it, and it's just this spray. And it hits Craver as he's carrying the ball right in the back. Hits him in the back. It's a full beer can. And I just respect the heck out of that. We used to walk in at halftime or after the game, and you had to go through the tunnel. So you had to cross the field. go through the Raiders sideline, and right about the 50 is where you entered. And the Raiders went to the right, and the you know your visiting team went to the left. Yeah. And, I mean, fans would be lined up where you're going in, just cussing. I had a guy tell me he was going to meet me at the bus and murder me. Murder me. That's what he said. I'm meeting you at the bus, and I'm going to murder you. Like, all right. But, like, they you walk through there, and you get showered with beer. They pour beer on you. I loved it, man. I thought it was awesome. It was one of the great places to go and be a part of because they truly had vitriol for you, and it was great. And so,
but that's when they were good.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we were kicking their ass.
I mean, you were kicking their ass, but they're not that good, and yet they still had that Raider swagger.
Yeah.
You know? Even though the mystique is dead, they still feel like they have the mystique, which I guess I kind of respect.
I do.
It's kind of sad.
I say all the time, and I mean it. I mean this. And this is like, I hate the Raiders with a white hot intensity of 1,000 suns, right? There's nobody I'd rather beat than the Raiders. But the league is a better place when the Raiders are relevant. And so my hope every year is the Raiders are relevant. Now, they've been relevant against the Broncos. I just had somebody send me a message on X. You know, they revealed the new Broncos uniforms. You've seen these uniforms, these things are just. I just wanted to go back to old school, but whatever. But they got a 5280 on the front of the helmet. It says 5280. And this Raider fan guy sent me a message on X or sent a message out on X. Not me personally, but just sent a message out on X. He goes, weird that the Broncos decided to honor the Raiders by putting the number of days it's been since they actually beat the Raiders. Because it's been like three or four straight years.
Yeah.
I think 8 straight games that we've lost, the Broncos have lost
to
the Raiders.
4 years. We still got a ways to go to get to 5,200, but up over 1,200.
Yeah. So pretty funny.
Raider fan, don't change.
Touche.
Don't change.
I love it. That's it?
That's it.
What about the question? Do we have the question?
Oh, there was one question I did want to get to. Mark, have you taken a look at the offensive linemen that are expected to go in the first round? Who do you think is the best?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people talk about Joe Alt. There's the kid. There's a bunch of kids, you know, that I love the kid from Oregon State. I can't remember his name. They're a bunch of Polynesian names. But I would tell you what I look for in college offensive linemen is the same thing I look for, you know, the professional offensive line. The same thing I talked to the kids at CU about.
Talese Fuaga?
Yeah.
Apologize if I didn't get that right.
Close enough. The Penn State kid, Ola Fasa. Fasa, whatever your name is. Mufasa.
That's what I was saying right there.
But I apologize. I should know your name, but I don't. So anyhow, it's the same thing I told the kids up at CU. Show me a kid who's got feet and hands, and I'll show you a kid can play. You think about this. Any sport, Mike, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, you show me somebody with great feet and hands, and I'll show you somebody who can play. The game, especially with offensive linemen, is 100% about your feet and your hands. If you can play and you can strike people and you can be violent with your hands and you can be quick and together with your feet, because your feet have to work. Your feet are not independent contractors. They can't go dook, 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 dook. Your feet have to go. They got to work together in unison, right? They've got almost like a string is between them. If this foot moves, then this foot's got to move with it. Ba, ba, ba. And I always say there's a sound. I tell kids this all the time. What's the rhythm of your feet in your head? It's like a symphony to me. So when I come off the ball, I want my feet to, like if I'm coming off on a run block, I want to first step down, second step, hands strike at the same time. So my feet would say, that's how they sound, right? And you just smacking people and taking them off the ball and creating leverage from a low to high plane. Oh my gosh, I get so excited about
Olu Fashanu.
Fashanu?
Fashanu? Oh, God.
Fashanu?
I'll get it right by draft night. The Penn State tackle.
Yeah, I'm not going to get it right.
By the way, leave it up to Mark Schlereth to somehow take offensive lineman, 300 pounds, sweaty, full of cheese whiz and taco meat, and somehow try to make him sound like symphonies and ballerinas.
That's exactly what it is.
You know.
A violent ballet.
You know.
Oh, my gosh.
The music of the feet.
Can we coin that phrase?
Oh, hey, put that in your handy-dandy.
Playing offensive line is like a valid. Okay. Playing offensive line is like a violent, beautiful ballet. Boom! Mark it down. Hey, for everybody involved in the Stinkin' Truth podcast, I am Mark Schlereth. He is Mike Evans. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day. Thursday, coming up in just a few days from now, draft night. We'll be here for it.